now time for, thank you. It's now time for Speaker Richard M. from San Clemente.
Hi, my name is Richard, and I am an alcoholic and an addict. And I am grateful to be in this meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous and less than fortunate to have this program in my life. And first and foremost, I'd like to welcome all the newcomers and say thank you to all my friends in this room here for your support. Let's see, I'm going to start out with a little something. I want to thank Jordan for asking me to speak on such short notice. I got a little nervous in the beginning there, but, I had my sponsee sitting next to me, and I said, I'm a little nervous, and he said, it's okay, it'll ease that pain, and he turned and looked at me and said, a couple of drinks, and you know what I said? I said, yeah, I don't have to do that today, thank God. I want to thank all of you for being here tonight. It's a pleasure to be here, and I feel very privileged to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all. My sobriety date is August 26th of 2009. So that means I'm coming up on 2 years next Friday, which is a miracle for this alcoholic and drug addict. I could not stop drinking or using. I did not want to, nor did I have any plans to. I started coming to Alcoholics Anonymous in April of 2009, when I believe I had enough. I wasn't having fun anymore. Things weren't working the way I wanted it to. I kept getting loaded, and I wasn't having any fun anymore. Nothing seemed to work out to my benefit. So I walked in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and my first meeting was in this church of the Aragon, the Monday night meeting. And the amazing thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that it shows a lot of love in these rooms. The first gentleman to come up to me and introduce himself to me is now my sponsor. I'd like to thank him very much. He has walked me through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it has shown me how to live a new life. And my new life is amazing. I'll tell you what right now. I was born on December 11th, 1971. I'll share a little bit of how it was, what happened, and what it's like now. I grew up with a big family. I have four older sisters, and we all struggle with our own addictions. Today we're all getting sober, which is an amazing thing, due to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. My second oldest sister just took 30 days a few days ago. My oldest sister is coming up on 18 months. My other sister, she's a normie. Like, she picks up one beer and doesn't even drink the whole thing. I don't understand that. Like a lot of us do. We don't understand that. I don't get it, nor do I want to get it. But the amazing thing about this program, and my other sister, she's, working her program too, trying to stay sober also. When I was younger, my parents, raised us the best they could. When I was a child, my mother and father got divorced, and I got to go live with my grandmother. She raised me. Thank God that she raised me, because she put some morals in my life. Even though I struggled and didn't always get what I wanted, I tried to find ways to get what I wanted. And that's when my addiction and alcoholism started kicking in. I started drinking at an early age. Probably 11 years old when I started my first drink and my first drug. I'll tell you a little funny story. First time I ever smoked pot was at the drive-in movie theater. This might take some of you back. The year that Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams came out. Okay. So my sister and her boyfriend had the brilliant idea of sneaking me into the drive-in movie theaters in the trunk of the car. Okay, and this is how, to get a cheap movie cheap. I kid you not, back then it was only, $2 to get in the drive-in theaters. We're sitting there, and they bust out a joint and give me a beer, and for the first time I got loaded, and I couldn't believe the feeling I had. It was like, wow, all the pain can go away in a mere second like this. This is awesome. I'm going to keep doing this for the rest of my life. that's probably what was going on in the back of my head, but I didn't realize it until years later. You know, I continued using and drinking all throughout my teenage years, through high school and everything, and, you know, I don't regret a bit of it. I had a lot of fun. Me and my friends would have kegger parties, you know, every weekend at one or the other house. You know, it didn't matter. The party was on continually. My alcoholism stemmed from the fact that I love to be inebriated. You know, plain and simple fact, I loved it. You know, I was looking for that continuous high all the time, whether it was alcohol, cocaine, meth, pills, acid, whatever it was, I would put it in my system. I was a garbage pail. I tell you what, man, I would do anything to be in another world. And, you know, the amazing thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is I don't have to do that anymore today. And I'm grateful for that. My dad was an alcoholic, probably of the worst kind. He would, you know, closet drink all the time and try to hide it from all of the family, and we knew he was a bad alcoholic. I remember once when I was young, this was a vague memory, I was probably only like 2 or 3, but he had come home raging drunk and wanted to take me away from the family, so my sisters hid me in the closet under a bunch of pillows and stuff, and the cops ended up getting called on, and he got took away, and you know, he struggled his whole life with alcoholism until he finally got sober. And I remember when I was about 8 or 9 years old, when he had his visitation with us kids, he would take us to these hospitals and institutions. And I was like, "What? You know, why do we have to spend our time here on the weekend with you, you know?" And little did I know, you know, he was in Alcoholics Anonymous. And, so my first breath of Alcoholics Anonymous was at a very young age, not knowing what it was or what it could do. But through the years, once my dad got sober, I saw, you know, his life change and how he became a better man. He did relapse after like 16 years of sobriety, after his second wife died of diabetes. And then he got remarried shortly after. And on that wedding day, he got shit-faced drunk. And I'll tell you a little story about that. He got so drunk that after the wedding at home, he fell over in the chair. My dad was a big man. He weighed about 350 pounds. And I was about 17 at the time, and I had to pick him up and drag him into bed. Now, I don't know what child wants to have to do that for their parents, but I did. You know, and I was well into my drinking career by then already, you know. I would drink, I don't know, on a daily basis during high school. You know, I had 4 older sisters. They enabled me. They would go and buy liquor for me. They would give me drugs. They would do whatever I asked. I was the little brother, you know. They loved me dearly. You know, and there were times where it was really too easy for me to get whatever I wanted, which was the amazing thing. It was like, it was really too easy. People made it too easy for me. And I don't know about you, but this alcoholic and drug addict really loved the fact that I could get it that easy. You know, I don't know where most of you come from, but getting alcohol and drugs that easy at a young age made it all the better. You know, made it way easy to get through life. You know, and today, my life is so much different that it's hard to compare to anything. You know, all through high school, I drank and used, and I experienced my first DUI when I was 17 years old. Now, if this doesn't make a good example of what a true alcoholic is, I don't know what will. But one day, me and my friend had a bright idea to drive around my hometown, which was Placentia, with 1 gallon of tequila. And we started out by going to Ralph's and picking up a bag of limes and some salt, you know, because what good is tequila without some limes and salt, right? Party's on. So, you know, this is our little venture, and this is one story, and I think you guys get a good kick out of it. So, we started at his house, And we went from one house to the next house to the next house. And at each stop, we must have took two or three shots with all our friends. And by the time, two or three hours had passed, we found ourselves in the park polishing off this gallon of tequila. I kid you not, we pretty much polished it off. And for two guys and a couple other pals only having a couple shots, you know what tequila does to you? It really gets you where you need to get. And so I'm driving him home. This is my first experience driving totally wasted. And I'm driving him home, and I get just to the street where he lives on, and I decide to turn left. And I look at him, you know, in a drunk stupor, hey, should I turn left? Should I go? And he looks at me, and he's like, yeah, sure, go ahead, you know. And I'm like, okay, here we go. And I was driving this Maverick, you know, and this Ford Maverick. And the thing, you know, had a little power to it. So I decided to turn left and floor it. Well, lo and behold, it stalled. It bogged out, and two cars were coming this way. Slam, T-boned me. No brake marks from them guys, and just sideways skid marks that way with my car. Crushed in the whole side of the car, and I was so drunk, and the two ladies that were driving the other car didn't even realize they'd hit me. And me and my buddy got out of the car, and I said, okay, man, you're home free. Go ahead and run on home. So he does. You know, he takes off and goes home because he's like two doors away from where we crashed. And, you know, the funny thing was, I was so drunk, I got out of the car and the two ladies were like, are you okay? And I said, oh, yeah, I'm fine. I'm just going to go sit here on the curb. So I go over there and sit on the curb, right? And before I knew it, I was sleeping in the gutter. Out cold. Next thing I know is, you know, the long arm of the law, pulling down, shaking my shoulder. Hey, buddy, wake up, you know, get up. And I said, what, you know, like we do, you know. What? I didn't do it, you know. I didn't, nah, it wasn't me, you know. And he's like, Mr. Moreno, you know. And he already knew me, of course, because, you know, with all the run-ins with my sisters and the few run-ins I'd had before with my hometown police, you know, it was nothing new. But this was my first serious involvement with the law due to alcohol. And, you know, locked me up, threw me in the back of the car, took me to the police station, and within a couple hours, my mom and stepfather showed up to pick me up, you know, because I was underage. So that's what they did, was call your parents and have them come pick you up. I mean, talk about embarrassing. You know, it wasn't my fault, though, still, you know. I don't know if you can relate, because it wasn't my fault. You know, I didn't drink all that booze, you know, and the funniest thing was my parents picked me up and they're like looking at me and pointing their finger, you know what you're doing wrong. And I said, yeah, I know what I'm doing wrong. Take me home. And, you know, as I walked out the police door, I started blaming everybody in the police station, you know, this and that. And, you know, those guys are assholes. And, you know, I didn't do nothing wrong. And this is my alcoholic mind telling me, you know, what I did was okay. And I knew it wasn't, you know, but I didn't want to admit to it. So I get home, and before you know it, I'm passed out cold. And when I wake up in the morning, I'm curled up behind the bedroom door. And I tell you what, that was like my first real hangover I'd ever experienced. Like, head-pounding hangover. And there was one little bit of information I forgot to tell you. This was a school night that I did this. Okay, so the next morning, my mom's kicking me, telling me to get up and go to school. And I look at the clock, I'm like, shit. Okay, so I get up, get dressed, and I go to school, you know. And she made me walk. She didn't want to give me a ride. So I'm walking to school, and I'm thinking about, oh, man, I'm late. I'm going to end up in this period. And so I walk in my history class, and I'm just reeking like alcohol still, you know. Oh, bad. You know, I can smell it. That must be bad. And I sit down, and my teacher gives me that peculiar look, like, just starts shaking his head, you know. And I sit down, and about 10 minutes pass, and he says, come outside here, I need to talk to you. And he looks at me, and he's like, have you been drinking? And I say, no, I haven't been drinking. Didn't you hear what happened last night? And he's just like, man, you're a knucklehead, you know. And I'm like, yeah, you know, teenage knucklehead, that's what I did best. He had already known what happened. Because, see, the two ladies that ran into me, One of them was head of the PTA, and the other lady was head of the DARE. So, yeah. I was hung and executed before I even had a chance. But it still wasn't my fault, you know, because that's what the alcoholic mind told me. You know, wasn't my fault. No way. No way. You know, not in a million years could I imagine that the gavel that was getting ready to be brought down upon me. So at 17, I experienced my first DUI. And that day from school, I got sent home within about 20 minutes of getting to school. So I was like, yeah, you know, I walked back home and hung out the rest of the day and wore off the hangover. That was my first experience of a true alcoholism. And, you know, at that time, I believe I knew I had a problem, but I didn't want to do anything about it. You know, a few years go down the road, and I continue to drink and, you know, take lots of acid and smoke lots of weed, because that's part of my story, you know. I'm not just, like, not defiant against anything. I like to, you know, rebel and do everything in my power to go against all the rules, because that's the kind of alcoholic and drug addict that I am. So, you know, and it was shortly after I got graduated from high school, about a quarter later than I should have, because, you know, I was always ditching school, going surfing, and, you know, trying to, you know, run my own will. Little did I know it wasn't getting me anywhere quick. Because I didn't want to admit that I had a problem. I not only had a problem with alcohol and drugs, but I had a life problem at age 17 and 18. And, you know, I didn't want to admit that. Too much ego, too much pride, and, you know, too much gusto in my life to want to give up such a good thing, right? You know what a good thing is, right? Two bottles in one hand. That's a good thing, you know. How can you put those down? So, you know, I get out of high school and, you know, I take a year off and I bum around. I go to Mexico a lot. I get really drunk down in Mexico quite a few times. And, you know, one night we were at Papa's and Beer and I decided, yeah, we'll drink some more tequila, you know. And the next morning I woke up in the back of my buddy's Bronco and they left the tailgate down and I was eaten alive by mosquitoes. Oh, what a horrible experience. And these assholes didn't have the common courtesy to pull me out and drive me into the house. Man, what a bunch of good buddies, huh? These are true alcoholic friends right here, you know. These are all the guys I grew up with, you know. We all partied the same. We all did the same drugs. We all went to the same school. We went to the same parties. We involved ourselves in the same activities. And, you know, it's amazing that we're all still alive today. A lot of them didn't drink or use like I did, you know. Most of my friends that I went to school with, I still converse with, I talk with. You know, most of them have families, have kids. Some of them are still into their addiction and their alcoholism, but who am I to say that they're an alcoholic or an addict, you know? I just have to be concerned with myself today and where I'm at. Because, you know, today I can be grateful and say that I'm an alcoholic and an addict, and, you know, I'm grateful to be alive because I should be dead. That's where my addiction took me to. My addiction took me to some of the darkest places I could imagine. I don't know about you, but when you're sitting there and you're waking up at, you know, 6, 7 in the morning and first thing you do is pack a beer to get going, I think you have a problem, you know. I think you have a problem. That was one of my best pastimes was to wake up, crack a beer, have a drink, smoke some pot, maybe do a couple lines. What else was on the table? Who knows? You know, I would do it. This went on for several years. I went to school, did like a 2 years of college, and, you know, my laziness and my lack of motivation didn't get me very far in college, so I decided to quit, you know, because, you know, me and my addiction and my alcoholism likes to tell me that I'm a quitter and that I can never follow through with anything and that, you know, my life's good the way it is, you know, and that's where my alcoholism takes me. I like to justify things. I like to tell myself the most grandiose stories that I could tell myself and tell myself that they're all okay, when in all reality they're not. It's just a farce, a facade, and a way of life that, you know, I don't have to live anymore. You know, I continued to drink and use, and I got pretty wrapped up in that methamphetamine use when I was about 21, 22, and had a nervous breakdown when I was about 22, and decided to get up and leave California and move to Salt Lake City, thinking that, you know, I could relocate and find a different life and do something different. But as it says in the big book, you know what insanity means is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results. Well, that's what I kept doing, was the same thing over and over again, and I didn't get different results. Same thing kept happening. I kept getting loaded. I kept getting into trouble, and I'd find myself in the same position. You know, my bright idea when I moved away from California in the first place was to go out to Utah and start growing weed. You know, wow. Man, what a life. You know, I have quite the green thumb, thanks to my grandmother. She taught me all I know about growing gardens. You know, so I went out there and started doing that for years and years. And, you know, my drinking continued and persisted and got worse. And within the first couple of years I lived out there, I experienced another run-in with the law in Salt Lake City. And, you know, I got a what they would call wet reckless or alcohol-related reckless. And I ended up having to go to my first treatment program, which was, I don't know, comparable to SP, whatever they call it out here. And anyways, I had to do not AA meetings, but alcohol driving course or whatever. So I went through that, and I was on probation for 2 years. And, you know, I got through that, and then finally, you know, at this time, they weren't testing me for anything, so, you know, I didn't drink, but I smoked a lot of pot, you know, because I didn't want to have a run-in with the law for drinking again. So, you know, I laid off my drinking a little bit. You know, I would party from time to time, but I would still smoke a lot of pot. And, you know, they didn't know anything about me growing weed yet. So, and at the time, I was kind of had my own little entrepreneurial business. I fell in with some people, and I started building grow rooms for people and selling, you know, lighting products and, you know, hydroponics and all that stuff to people in Salt Lake and teaching them how to grow their own gardens. And I made kind of a lucrative business for a few years off that until one day, of course, I'm sure you guys know what's going to happen. The law comes knocking on the door, and it wasn't just the law. It was the DEA, the FBI, the county sheriffs, the city police, and the freaking news van. So all of a sudden, I'm sitting there, and you know the best part about this was we had just got back from the park playing around to Frisbee golf, because that's what us alcoholics and stoners do, is go to the Frisbee park in the morning and play Frisbee golf and drink and smoke pot. So, you know, we get back from the Frisbee park, and of all things, I'm taking a nap on the couch when the DEA busts down the door. So, I went to jail sober. Man, that really sucked. I'll tell you what, man. Had a whole pile of weed on the counter and mushrooms in the table, whiskey and beer scattered everywhere. And, you know, I went to jail sober. Whew, man. I don't know, you know, they talk about insanity and trying to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. I tell you what, that wasn't no different than the time before. In fact, it was even worse. So, being as it may that I was already in the Salt Lake County system for this prior alcohol-related reckless, I figured, well, you know, they're going to set bail, I'll call somebody, I'll get bailed out, you know. And I called, I don't know how many people. I couldn't even count them on my hands that it was that many. But no one wanted to help me this time. No one wanted to give Rich a free ride. And, you know, so far through my life, you know, I hadn't got what I wanted anyways. So what difference did it make then? So I spent about, I don't know, 6, 7, 8 days in jail. Time goes by pretty slow when you're in a square room staring at 4 walls and a window. It really sucks, you know. But I didn't learn my lesson yet, you know. Finally, they released me on my own recognizance. I went home, and my house was thrashed, man. The cops, they tore down the walls, pulled out all the cereal, dumped it all on the floor, looking for cocaine, you know. Like, I wasn't even doing cocaine yet, you know. But I was, actually. You know, I just wasn't doing it that day. You know, so, of course, I get out of jail, I go home, and what's the first thing I do? So I stop at the liquor store and get a bottle of whiskey and some beers, and, you know, I'm a free man again. I tie it on. Because you know how this alcoholic thinks? Is that nothing's going to kill the pain better than a couple of drinks. Nothing's going to ease the tension. Nothing's going to make it better unless I decide to get drunk. So I did. And I continued to get drunk until I had my day in court. You know, after that arrest, you know, I was surprised they actually let me out of jail because my bond was like $25,000 and I was looking at like 4 felony charges and 25 years in jail. But I didn't learn my lesson yet, you know. So, of course, you know, I bought the lawyer, I went through the whole 9 yards, and my second experience with the court system and the rehabilitation programs continued. I was recommended to the custody of myself once again. I love that. The custody of myself. Probation for 3 years, and this was supervised probation, so I had to go and piss in a cup once a week. So, you know, I stayed sober. I drank a little from time to time, but I was in fear of having to go to jail. You know, I actually got a pretty good deal. I don't know, you know, if that's not God looking out for you, I don't know what is. So I continued to do what I was doing, and after a year and a half of being on probation, my probation officer said, okay, you've done a good job, you finished your program, I'm going to let you go. Oh my gosh, half the time, all right, time to party. You know what? And the party was on. I tell you what, the party was on. I started selling cocaine. That was a fun one. I started drinking twice as much. I started smoking twice as much again. Just as quick as I quit for that short period of time, did my addiction take charge of my life once again. You know, alcohol was soon to be the demise of me. I forgot to mention that at this time, you know, I was working up at the ski resorts there. I tell you what we did. We skied all day, snowboarded all day, and partied all night. And I worked in the kitchen, so it was really easy to get back into drinking and using very, very quickly. Because being a chef, that's what we do in the kitchen, is we get loaded, you know. We get loaded. So I did that for, you know, a good 14 years. And, you know, it was a good life. I don't regret any of it, though. You know, they say we have to learn from our mistakes. And I still haven't learned from my mistakes, because you know what this alcoholic and drug addict does? Is he keeps trying to do the same thing over and over again and expect different results. You know, enough of the using and the drinking. Let me tell you about a little bit of the solution here in Alcoholics Anonymous. There's a lot of love in these rooms to be had, and if you're a newcomer, I highly suggest you keep coming back, you find a sponsor, you pick up that big book, you read it, you work the steps, and your life will change, because my life has changed. I can honestly tell you, I don't know how this program works, but it works, because I'm an alcoholic and an addict that didn't want to stop drinking and using, had no ambition to stop drinking and using, and flat out couldn't until I walked into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, that gentleman that I said is my sponsor, he is still my sponsor today. I've read the book with him from page to page and work these steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'll tell you what, I had to concede to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and a drug addict, and today I'm grateful for that. I had to come to believe in a power greater than myself, and I had to ask for that power greater than myself's help. You know, they say in the book, God could and would if he were sought. You know, and that's what I've been doing over the last 2 years, is seeking my God. And my God does amazing things for me in my life today and the people around me. Because I had to make one choice. I had to make one choice to put down those alcohol and those drugs and get on with my life. Because the life I had before wasn't my life. You know, after working these steps, especially the fourth step and the fifth step, I got to find out a lot about myself. A lot about how my clock ticked inside. And what drove me to drink, what drove me to use. And a lot of it was just pure stupidity, I believe. You know, ignorance and stupidity is what drove me to drink. You know, I thought there was always something better out there for me because I drank and used. You know, and I had that far-fetched dream that there was. Eventually, that came to a screaming halt. You know, in April, just over 2 years ago, when I walked through the doors of Alcoholics Anonymous, I was beaten up, broken down, and drained spiritually. And I didn't know where I was going, where I was headed, or where I would be. And the problem with this alcoholic mind is that I was always trying to look forward to the future. And like I said before, trying to do the same thing over and over again and expecting different results just wasn't working for me. I had to make a change. I had to make a decision. And my decision was to stay sober. Now, when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous, it took me a little while. It took me 1, 2, 3, 4 sobriety dates to finally get a sobriety date and keep it. So if you're a newcomer and you have this wonderful opportunity that Alcoholics Anonymous is offering, keep that first sobriety date, pick up that big book, and read it. Because there's an amazing miracle that's about to happen, and it's called sobriety. You know what I found true about Alcoholics Anonymous today is that it taught me how to create a conscious contact with the higher power of my understanding. And today I choose to call that higher power God. You know, I had put God on the back burner for years and years. And I always blamed God for putting me in the position that I put myself in. And today I know different. I know that my God is a loving God. He cares for me and wants me to do the best that I possibly can do. Today, you know, I do a few simple things in the morning. I wake up, I hit my knees, I pray, and I ask God for help. You know why I do that? Because I can't do this alone. Second thing I do is I read my spiritual readings for the day, and I reflect, I meditate, and I think of nothing but positive things that I can acquire in today's doings. I walk out the door, I go to work, and I try to be a productive person to society today. I try to contribute today. You know, and that's only through Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what Alcoholics Anonymous has shown me. And, you know, today, I never thought I would say this, but Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. I would not be here today if it were not for Alcoholics Anonymous. This book is an amazing book. This program is an amazing program, and the people in this program are amazing people. You know, I cannot express that enough. What I found in Alcoholics Anonymous is a new way of life that I choose to call my life today. And it's shown me how to be useful. It's shown me how to love one another. It's shown me how to accept my life as it is today. It's shown me that I can accomplish anything as long as I stay sober. You know, because God could and would if he were sought. And I think that's the big deal with Alcoholics Anonymous, is it brings us to this place where we have to trust in our higher power that has complete control over everything. Because for years, I thought that I had control over everything. And to be honest with you, I did not. You know, and today, those few simple things I do in the morning, I turn it over, I give it to God, and I ask for his guidance and help. I call my sponsor. I talk with other alcoholics. I sponsor guys, you know, and I be of service. The most important thing about Alcoholics Anonymous is that we can be of service to one another. You know, And that's a good deal, because this selfish, self-centered son of a bitch you see standing up here had to let that go too. You know, I could not think of anything but myself before Alcoholics Anonymous. It was all about me. It was all about what I could get, and if it was yours, I wanted it. You know what? And today I don't have to be like that. You know, and that's part of the miracle of this program. It takes us to a whole nother level. The spirituality that I found in this program is unsurmountable to what I could even explain right now. You know what's happened through the years, the couple years that I've been sober, is that A, there's God in my life. B, there's people that love me. C, my family cares about me once again, you know? And that's just the amazing thing. I've been able to not run from my problems anymore, face my fears, tackle these mountains that keep propping up in front of me, and walk right over them. You know why? Because Alcoholics Anonymous show me how to live a good, sober life. You know, and I only have to do a few simple things. You know, and they're only suggested to do. You know, and that's read the big book, work these steps, help others, and pray. I mean, I don't know how much more simple that can be. You know, I know as alcoholics and addicts, we like to complicate things. Believe me, I've had many years of trying to complicate my life, and it got me nowhere. And today, I've never had it so good. You know, I drove around without a license for like 5 years. You know, and I know a lot of you can relate. You know, and once I got sober, the fear of actually going to the DMV disappeared. And when I got there and got my license, I was like, wow, I got a license again. That's an amazing thing. You know, today I pay my bills. I have car insurance. You know, I got to go back to school. And I'm already paying back my school loan. I have a job. People trust me. I mean, look, you guys elected me treasurer of this meeting. That's a freaking miracle. You know? I mean, I was a liar, cheat, and a thief. You know? But I don't have to live like that anymore. I've gained trust back from people around me, my family, my friends. And that's a wonderful thing. You know, and it's all due to Alcoholics Anonymous. In this big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, these steps, the people in these meetings, and the friendship, the fellowship, and the love that's in these rooms. You know, I just do a few simple things. I hit my knees in the morning, I pray, I ask God for help, I come to meetings, and I be a service. You know, if you're new, stick around for the miracle to happen, because it will happen. If you've been here a while, keep coming back. Because, you know, we have to be examples to those that are new, that keep walking into these rooms. And, you know, I just want to thank you all for being here tonight and giving me this opportunity to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I hope that anything I've said tonight might have touched your heart. And I want to leave you with one thing. I read this every day. And it's something that my sponsor suggested me to do. And it's out of the big book, page 417. And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing, happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world as what needs to be changed in me and my attitudes. Thank you. My name is Richard, and I'm an alcoholic.